When I found out I was going to be a parent, I immediately felt a lot of anxiety and worry. So I went on to BetterHelp to try to look for a therapist to help me with that.
My relationship with my family and with my boyfriend and with myself were suffering. I really needed help.
I was ruminating a lot. Really getting those thoughts out to a therapist and getting feedback was just life-changing.
If you're thinking of giving therapy a try, visit BetterHelp.com/stuff today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/stuff.
In Puerto Rico, there's adventure around every corner and natural treasures waiting to be explored, like El Yunque, the only tropical rainforest in the U.S. Get swept away by natural beauty and come away with unique stories that could only be experienced in Puerto Rico and that remind you why you travel in the first place. Visits end, but stories last forever. You don't become a part of the island, it becomes a part of you. No passports required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Welcome to Stuff You Should Know from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Josh Clark. There's Charles W. Chuck Bryant, and there's Noel, our guest producer today, which means it's still Stuff You Should Know.
That's right, the Jerry-free edition.
Yeah. Feels weird.
Yeah.
She's like, I can't do this today. I'm going to the mall. She's always leaving us for the mall.
I know, that's weird. Ever since we did that mall episode and she learned it was a thing.
Right.
You know?
She's like, this sounds like my kind of place.
How you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm been wanting to do this one for a long time.
Yeah.
And I think I started to research it and was like, oh, man. Maybe we went on tour or something like that. I got pulled away from it and never went back to it. So I'm glad we're doing it finally.
So stuttering, if you're in North America or Australia, and stammering, if you're in the UK, perhaps, is that how it works?
I don't know. I know that stammering is what they call it in the UK. Do they call it stuttering in Australia as well?
Yeah. This thing I pulled up just said, in general, It's North America and Australia say stutter. And
gotcha.
UK, they say stammer, but it's the same thing.
Right. It's basically, I think the way that they get around that is calling it disfluency.
No one calls it that.
The scientists do.
I never heard that word.
Sure, disfluency. So I think that's actually the clinical name for what we call stuttering or stammering, depending on where you are.
Yeah, and wasn't that a Colin Firth movie called The Disfluent Prince, Who Would Be King?
Yep. I think that was the working title. What did they call it? The King's Speech?
Yeah, pretty good movie.
That was cute.
Cute.
It was. Anytime you get Jeffrey Wright in there in an inspirational role, it's going to be a cute movie.
Jeffrey Rush. Yeah, agreed.
Jeffrey Wright always plays like the super smart, like kind of deep state guy.
Jeffrey Wright, he was Basquiat, right? Am I thinking of the right guy?
Did he play Basquiat?
I think so.
I don't think so. In the movie Basquiat?
Yeah. Isn't that Jeffrey Wright?
I don't think so.
Who's Jeffrey Wright?
Jeffrey Wright has been in tons of stuff. Just look him up. You'll be like, oh, that's Jeffrey Wright.
Okay.
This is going terribly already.
No, it's great.
This is basically like the podcast equivalent of stuttering. Because, Chuck, stuttering, also known as stammering, better known as disfluency, is an interrupted flow of speech. Okay?
Right.
But when it starts to qualify for what we would call like stuttering or stammering, it's really noticeable. It's it has an interrupting effect typically on the conversation or the communication that's meant to be going on, the speaking that's going on. That's on the far end of the spectrum. On the other end of the spectrum, apparently, just about everybody engages in disfluent speech. I'm particularly guilty because I say a lot, and that's a form of disfluency. And disfluency, Chuck, comes from the idea that that when you speak fluently, you're speaking in a flowing manner that is easy to follow typically and is uninterrupted. But when you start adding things like or pauses or that kind of thing,
yeah,
like that, that's disfluency. And again, disfluency is a normal part of communication if it occurs about less than 10% of the time. After that, you start to get into the stuttering / stammering spectrum or side of the disfluent spectrum.
Yeah, and one thing I learned, you know, you and I both QA, quality assure, each episode, which means this is a little behind the curtain peek, but Jerry will send them back to us, and you listen to it once, and then give her any like edit notes or whatever and thoughts. Right.
Yeah.
And then I will listen to it, and generally I have no edit notes. And I found that...
I know, we're both going to be so self-conscious about that.
Well, that's where I was getting to, though. I found early on when listening to these episodes of ourselves that it doesn't pay to focus on disfluency in our own language because it can drive you nuts.
It really can.
And so we have a conversational podcast, so we're not trying to, you know, we're not Churchill or Henry or, was it Henry the Sixth? No. Who was
that? Yeah, it was, I don't remember. Could just Colin Firth. How about that?
Yeah, we're not Colin Firth addressing the country on the airwaves where it was very important that he come across as, you know, had a certain fluency, but...
Right.
When it comes to stuff like this, I think people are used to the fact, like occasionally we'll get emails like, oh, you guys sure do say like and a lot.
Right.
And
we're just like, our response is better luck finding a different podcast.
Yeah. This is not for you.
No.
So anyway, I learned to not drive myself crazy with that stuff.
No, but it's funny you bring that up because I was just yesterday listening to the Stockholm Syndrome episode for Stuff You Should Know Selects.
Right.
And I must have said like five times over the span of 10 words.
You can't even, don't even listen to that.
But even I noticed it. Yeah. I normally have, I'm pretty good about tuning it out. But even I noticed it that time. And it really kind of raises this issue that the whole thing about stuttering or stammering is not that it's a disorder or
right.
disease or a the sign of an unintelligent person or that the person can't think of what they mean to say.
Sure.
It's absolutely none of those things. It is strictly an interruption in what we would consider normal communication. And so attention is drawn to it, and it turns out that that just makes the problem worse and worse. So it turns into this vicious cycle.
Yeah.
To where... that's all it is. That's it. That's really it. And I mean, like, there's different theories about what's behind it or what could make it worse or what could possibly make it better. But really all it is just interrupted communication between two people. 'Cause it's not like the person who's stuttering, stutters in their head. Like, it's strictly when they're speaking and communicating with other people. So it's a unique condition.
Yeah, and there are generally three ways in which that flow can be interrupted. One is repetition. So if you say the first few, like the beginning of a word, if you repeat it a few times in a row and then say the word. another would be prolongation. So if the word is like, you would roll that L out by itself for a long time.
Right.
And then the last would be an abnormal stoppage, which is just no sound at all coming out.
Yeah, a block.
Yeah, a complete block.
And
have you know anyone with a severe stutter?
Sure, yeah. I've known people with stutters before.
Yeah, I know somebody with a very severe stutter, and it's always interesting because I think, and we'll get to like what you should and shouldn't do as a participant in a conversation with someone who stutters.
Right.
But before I read this, I knew that just as a courtesy, what you probably shouldn't do, which is correct, is try and complete someone's sentence for them.
Yeah.
Even though that urge is there, you know, it's just a natural instinct because people do that, you know, when speaking all the time.
Yeah.
If someone can't think of a word or something. But like you said, that's not what's going on.
No. No. And I mean, that, and I think that urge also comes from a good place typically. Like you're not saying like, pitch is the word stupid. That's not what you're saying when you finish their sentence. You're helping them along,
right?
To keep the conversation on track, right? But what you're also doing is saying you're not communicating effectively. I'm jumping in and taking over on your behalf. Just sit there and be quiet. So, yeah, we'll talk more about what to do or what not to do when you're in a conversation with somebody with a stutter.
I know what you mean. You're trying to help. You're not trying to like be a jerk.
Yeah,
but it's not a help.
No, it's not.
But I imagine they also understand to a certain degree too.
Well, probably just from being exposed to it so much.
Yeah.
For so long.
And some people feel, you know, like with anything like this, some people might be used to it and have been like, well, you know, this how I talk, I've tried to correct it and I've kind of learned to live with it. And other people might still feel really bad about it.
Yeah, I read a blog post basically by a guy named, I can't find it anywhere. Great, great blog post where he said, I recognize and accept my stutter.
Yeah.
And it was on say.org. His name was Danny Litwack, L-I-T-W-A-C-K, Litwack maybe. Uh-huh. I embrace and accept my stutter. It's great. He talks about his experience with growing up with a stutter his whole life and just what a negative impact it had on him for a very long time. And I saw this elsewhere, but the first step toward either getting past your stutter or just getting over the fact that you have a stutter is accepting that you have a stutter.
Yeah.
And that's from what I can gather, a really big first step, because I think people recognize that they have a stutter to themselves, but there's also they take measures to protect against sharing that with other people.
Right.
So I read a story about another person who grew up with a stutter, and when they got to, I think, college or something, on the first day of this one class, everybody went around and said where they were from, and this person said that they forgot where they were from, rather than having to say Wilmington, Delaware, because of the W and the D. So instead, they told the class they forgot where they were born and grew up.
Because in that case, there were certain triggers?
Yeah, the W and the D, the W in Wilmington and the D in Delaware. So there's like a lot of obfuscation that people with stutters engage in. People with stutters are not to be trusted, in other words. But sure. they have to basically just take steps to make it seem like they don't have a stutter. And I think what this guy, Danny Litwack, was saying, and then, like I said, I saw elsewhere, people saying, like, I have a stutter. Like, this is how I talk. You're going to have to, like, either just walk away during the conversation or just let me finish on my own time. But this is me, and this is how I talk. And I'm accepting it or learning to, and you're going to have to as well. And that's the first step, as I understand it, once you're an adult, I should say.
I think there are so many things in life where that's the case.
Oh, yeah, man.
Instead of, like, at a certain point, at a certain age, I got to a point where, like, well, I can really continue to work to try and change this thing, or I can just accept that this is kind of who I am.
Right.
And be happy.
Yep. Don't worry. Be happy now.
So don't ever strive to be better, people. Just accept how messed up you are.
Right. And force everyone else around you to accept it.
Should we take a little break here?
Mm-hmm.
All right. We'll take a break and we'll come back and get into some of the stats and how stutters can develop right after this.
Ready, set, griddle this grilling season. Get the Weber Slate rust-resistant griddle with a carbon steel cooktop that's safe for metal tools. It's pre-seasoned with food-safe oils and ready to cook on right out of the box.
With no use of coatings, you can use metal tools to flip, press, and scrape without worry. It's the griddle that stays ready, not rusty. Everything rusts and nobody talks about it because they couldn't fix it until now. With Weber's new rust resistance technology, your Weber will last for years.
Yeah, when used, the carbon steel griddle hardens and bonds the surface, which reduces the ability for moisture to collect and rust to form. Plus, the griddle heats evenly edge to edge, reaching all the way up to 500 degrees.
That's right. And with the Weber Works Prep Cook and Store system, you can keep cooking and cleaning supplies handy, carry food and condiments from the kitchen to the griddle, and even convert the side table into a prep station. So get fired up for your new Weber Slate rust-resistant griddle.
Hey everybody, it's time you heard about Squarespace. Squarespace has the tools you need to create and sell your own website. Whether it's an online course or custom merch, Squarespace has you covered.
That's right. Courses is a great program. You can start with a professional layout that fits your brand, upload video lessons to teach techniques and skills, and tailor your course with a powerful Fluid Engine editor.
That's right. With Fluid Engine, which is a next generation website design system, by the way, it's never been easier for anyone to unlock unbreakable creativity.
That's right. And don't forget the commerce side, because after that, you can charge a one-time fee or you can even sell a subscription.
Yeah. So turn your creativity into income with Squarespace courses. And right now, go to squarespace.com/stuff for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use offer code STUFF to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Squarespace.
All right. So we're back. Promise stats.
Yeah.
The stats ye shall receive. 1% roughly of adults in the world stutter.
Yeah.
But that is not 1% of children, because many times, in fact, about 75% of the time, 5% of children stutter, and about 75% of the time, they will lose that disfluence as they grow older.
Right.
Leaving that at a 1% number as adults.
Yeah. And so in the U.S., there's about 3 million or so, maybe 3.5 million people, adults, that stutter, mm-hmm. right?
More women.
Is it more women or more men?
No, sorry, more men.
More men.
Four to five to one.
It's like 4 to 5 in childhood, and then it goes to like 3 or 4 in adulthood.
Okay.
So by far, men stutter more than women. And although... strangely, boys tend to naturally lose their stutter if they're going to lose their stutter in childhood more than girls.
Yeah, and I don't think they found any rhyme or reason to that at all, right?
No, man. There's like a lot of lack of understanding as far as stuttering goes.
Yeah.
Scientifically, socially, we just don't know that much about it, which is surprising because apparently as far back as Moses, people have been stuttering on record.
Yeah, we'll tell that story later.
Oh, okay.
There could be a genetic basis, because about 60% of people who stutter have a family member who stutters.
Yeah, and I also saw that among monozygotic, also known as identical twins, mm-hmm. if one twin stutters, there's a 90% chance that the other one does as well.
Oh, interesting.
But for dizygotic, like fraternal twins, there's only a 20% chance. So there's clearly a genetic basis to stuttering somehow.
Right, but it's also one of those things where it can be genetic, doesn't have to be. Sometimes if you suffer a head trauma, you might develop a stutter.
Right.
Sometimes it's developmental. Sometimes it could be, obviously with something like Parkinson's disease, that could be a symptom. But those are, to me, I think, probably different kinds of stuttering, but still
exactly.
Stuttering.
Right. So there's basically two main categories: developmental, which is by far the one that accounts for the most cases of stuttering.
Yeah.
And then the other is acquired, like you said, say from like Parkinson's, or they put you on a prescription that like suddenly is making you stutter. There's also psychogenic, which is supposedly an emotional trauma can give you a stutter. I don't know if that's just leftover lore, because apparently they used to think all stutters were the result of some psychology.
Yeah.
And they just say, well, no, it's possible, or some people have it, and just haven't figured out that it's not the case at all, or if there really is a small section of people who do have psychogenic stutters. But all of those would fall under acquired, and then the other one is developmental.
Boy, how about that guy that took mushrooms and quit stuttering?
Yeah.
That's so interesting.
I saw a TED Talk of his once.
Oh, really?
Yeah, He's like all about mushrooms saving the world.
Paul Stamets?
Yep.
Yeah, he leads off our article on How Stuff Works, and he had a severe stutter, was very affected by it, kind of withdrew socially, went camping one time, took a bunch of psychedelic mushrooms and climbed a tree, got up there, decided he could not climb down, and then the storm came in and got really intense, and he said he sort of felt one with the world, which sounds about right. And eventually the storm passed, he came down, and while he was up there during this intense experience, he was like, I will not stutter anymore. And he just kept saying that, came down, and he had lost his stutter.
Yeah, and apparently he didn't relapse, which is pretty unusual, I think.
So he started studying mushrooms for a living.
Yeah, he became a mycologist.
Yeah.
Man, I've said this before, I'll say it again. One of the best articles I've ever read in my life was called Blood Spore.
Yeah.
And I think it was in Harper's. And it was about a murder in the world of mycologists. It was just so interesting. Blood Spore.
Coming soon to a theater near you.
I hope so.
You should write the script.
Yeah. So Stamets was remarkably lucky in that he just basically decided not to stutter anymore. And stop stuttering.
Yeah.
Apparently, the fact that he didn't relapse is probably what's most remarkable, because I think relapsing among stuttering treatments is actually pretty common.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But again, this is once you get out of childhood. It's fairly common to have to develop a stutter as you're a child, as you're learning to talk. And then it's equally common to lose that stutter as you age, usually within 18 months of developing the onset of the stutter. But then as you acquire this or develop this stutter, as you get older, it apparently becomes more and more set in. And that seems to be because of the plasticity of your brain when you're a kid.
Yeah.
It's almost like, from what I can gather, it's like if you have a stutter past a certain point, it almost gets locked into your brain as your neural pathways solidify and cement.
Yeah, that makes
sense. Like you learned to have a stutter after a while.
Yeah. And I think they say to wait, I think they wait like 3 months before they even start looking into it, because that's how fleeting a stutter can be when you're a little kid.
Right.
After 3 months, they'll say, all right, maybe we should start looking into this.
Right. You'd want to go to a speech pathologist who will be able to diagnose it.
Yeah.
And usually what they're looking for when you take your child who's developed a stutter to a speech pathologist is how pronounced it is. There's a guy in, I think, the late 90s named Barry Guitar. He sounds like he played, you know, guitar for the band Boston.
He knows all the chords. No, wait, that's Guitar George.
Right.
Sorry.
What's that from?
Oh, come on.
Guitar George? Is that a Ray Stevens song?
No, it's from Dire Straits, Sultans of Swing.
Oh, gotcha. That's a good song.
Yeah.
It is a good song.
I love it.
So Barry Guitar came up with 5 levels of stuttering development, and I already referenced the first. I know his name's awesome.
I just can't get over that.
I already referenced the first level, which is you have less than 10% of your speech is disfluent. That's anybody walking around like that, right?
Yeah.
Unless you're like the King of England or something.
Sure.
And then ironically, unless you're that one king who had a stutter.
Yeah.
And then it goes on from there and just it gets worse and worse. But one of the things that's attendant with these different stages of development of a stutter are like emotional problems or symptoms, like comorbid symptoms along with the stutter. So there can be things like blinking, like pursing your lips, where you're frustrated, where you're angry, where you're fearful, where you're anxious, in conjunction with stuttering. And so this is the kind of thing that the speech pathologist will be looking for to kind of diagnose your kid, like, no, this is just normal kid stuff, or actually the stutter's developing faster than we'd like it to, so we need to start treating it now.
Well, that makes sense, because dopamine, we've talked a lot about dopamine on the show, the neurotransmitter,
mm-hmm.
If you have an overabundance of dopamine, we talked about in the Tourette's episode.
Right.
Is that one of the things that can be comorbid with stuttering? Because I know too much dopamine can lead to a stutter as well.
Yeah, supposedly. So dopamine controls movement, right?
Yeah.
And if you have too much, it makes you have tics like Tourette's, you were saying?
Well, it can.
So I noticed this, that Parkinson's and dopamine are, I think they're like Parkinson's has to do with too much dopamine.
Yeah.
And Parkinson's is one of the ways that you could acquire neurogenically a stutter.
Yeah.
So that makes total sense that there's something in your brain with dopamine transmission to where you have maybe too much of it. And so you're trying to, you're having trouble getting the thoughts in your head into the movements that it takes to create the speech.
Yeah. I mean, it's a little clumsy the way the brain does this. It would be a lot easier if it was streamlined in one part of the brain, but there are two distinct parts of the brain that deal with language processing, and one is the one that processes it, and one articulates it with in a motor skill way.
Yeah.
And when those two things, they've done brain imaging mapping, and they found that there's some sort of discontinuity between those two processes going on.
Right.
When that, there's a stutter.
That's stuttering, right. So it could be too much dopamine. That's one thing. Again, the research into stuttering is so basic at the moment. It's really surprising. What they're trying to figure out though is, are you born with the stutter? Like when you're born, you're going to have this problem because your brain isn't, using dopamine properly or is right. overproducing dopamine, or, are you, as your brain's developing, something goes a little off to the side, to the left, and your brain has trouble with dopamine from that point on. So yeah. They're trying to figure out the etiology of it, in other words.
Did you look into this, the genes, the four genes?
Yeah, a little bit.
Did you find names for those?
I did not.
That's, I didn't either.
That is how basic the research is right now.
Yeah.
They're not even saying what genes they're finding.
Yeah, apparently they did discover four different genes that are linked to these proteins. And these proteins are sort of like they're responsible for what's called cellular trafficking. So they kind of make sure that the elements of the cell end up where they need to be within that cell.
Right.
And they said that more than one neurological disorder can be linked to this trafficking process. So I guess it's related to those proteins and those genes.
Yeah, but they're like, who knows?
Right.
We just, like, they've gotten to the point where they have identified there's something up with these proteins in the cells, and it's linked to stuttering somehow. Now, just give us like 10 years to go figure out how.
Right.
But yeah, they're starting to realize now there's some sort of genetic basis to this, to stuttering.
Well, I mean, I think the twin study. That says a lot right there.
For sure.
You know?
Yep.
Can we talk about Moses?
I think it's high time we talked about Moses. We've been dancing around the burning bush for a while now.
I
can't believe that got a laugh.
Well, I was laughing because every time I think of burning bush, I think of Three Amigos and how funny that singing bush was.
I never saw that one.
Three Amigos?
Yeah. I could do the Three Amigo salute, but I never saw it.
Oh, man, that's a classic.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
Oh, sure. Why is that surprising?
I don't know. I feel like I would have seen it if
three
it
comedic
were a
icons?
You, right.
Funny movie?
Oh, I know why I never saw it, because Chevy Chase is in it.
Oh, you don't
I'm
like
sure,
him?
I'm sure. No, I remember my dad raised me to really dislike Chevy Chase.
Oh, that's right.
So I probably wasn't allowed to see it.
That's right, because you didn't see Fletch, right?
I think I stopped watching Fletch like partway through. My dad had a real influence on me.
And why didn't he like Chevy Chase though?
I have no idea.
He had a bone to pick?
I guess. I think he thought he was a jerk or something.
Well, he was.
Right. Turns out Dad was right.
All right. So Moses, I know a lot about the Bible because as listeners know, I was raised in the church, but I didn't know this. I don't remember this story at all.
Yeah, I hadn't heard it either.
So apparently Moses was a little baby at one point, And the Pharaoh said, was warned, you know, that Moses was going to not be his friend when he grew up. So he said, all right, let me try something out. I'm going to give this little baby Moses a choice between a bowl full of gold.
Sure.
And a bowl full of hot coals.
This is what you do with babies.
If he chooses the gold, then I'm going to kill him.
Yeah. Typical Egyptian stuff.
Yeah. So, of course, with a baby, Moses is going to reach for the gold. And then apparently an angel intervened.
Todd
the angel, and directed little Moses' hand to the hot coals instead.
A little gruffly, if you ask Moses.
Moses grabbed a hot coal, put it in his mouth, and that's how he got to the stutter.
And he's blamed Todd ever since.
And here's what I don't get, is that Moses went to God and was like, hey, man, I'm supposed to lead the people out of Egypt. I have a bad stutter. Can you, can you do something for me?
Because right.
You're God.
And God said, no sweat.
Yeah, he said, God, Mr. Ed?
You didn't know that?
That's why that horse could talk.
Yeah. Because he was God.
So God said, yeah, sure, I can help you out. Just have your brother, Aaron, take the mic.
Right. And Moses was like, I was more thinking like you'd perform a miracle right. on me. But, yeah, I probably could have thought of having Aaron speak for me as well, God. Thanks for that, though.
I don't know how I missed that story.
He apparently, there's a quote, I am heavy of mouth and heavy of tongue. And I saw some Bible site where they were debating whether or not what they were talking about was a stutter. Apparently some later Hebraic text said that Moses had trouble pronouncing THs, thorn sounds.
Oh, okay.
It sounds more like he had a lisp than a stutter.
Right.
But who knows? Yeah. Let's go with stuttering, though. Because right. a lot of people do say that Moses had a stutter.
Well, but he overcame a famous thick tongue.
Yeah, it's pretty thick. I've gotten used to it. But I remember at first when we first started doing this, like, man, I should not be speaking for a living. Like, I have a speech impediment.
No, you don't.
Pure and simple.
No, it's just everyone now just thinks, hey, that's Josh's voice.
Yes, it's so grating.
Smooth and silky.
Mm-hmm.
Who else in history, Josh?
Let's see. The Emperor Justinian apparently had
okay.
one. Or no, I'm sorry. I was wrong. It was Demosthenes. He was a Greek statesman.
Uh-huh.
He apparently was smart enough to say, who could help me with a stutter? Oh, how about an actor? Somebody
yeah.
who speaks, broadcasts their voice for a living. So he hired an actor to help him, and the actor had him do things like chew on pebbles and try to talk.
Yeah.
Smart. He did his speeches while he's walking uphill, I guess, to control his breathing. This is actually pretty sharp stuff. I think
yeah.
out of all of the historical treatments that we're going to cover, this one might most closely resemble, aside from the mouthful of pebbles, modern treatment for stuttering.
Yeah, which is to say speaking exercises.
Right.
Well, you did say Justinian. I don't know if Justinian had the stutter, but at the very least, his physician,
mm-hmm.
Aetius of Amida, was one of the first people to say, hey, maybe that the frenulum, you know, that little flap of skin under your tongue,
right,
the connector to the bottom of your mouth.
Man.
He was the first one that said, why don't we start slicing that thing up?
No.
And just the tongue in general, over the years, there have been all kinds of surgeons that tried variations of slicing the frenulum or cutting down of the tongue itself.
Now, I could probably use that one by H.D. Chegoin. I'm sure that's how you say it the second way.
Yeah.
He basically said, stuttering is a result of an oversized tongue, which I have. Let's just slice and dice a little off the sides.
But none of these has worked.
I know. Of course it didn't work. It's just horrific. Apparently, though, at the same time, there were these surgeons who get all the press because their stuff is so horrific. But there were also other people who were kind of on the right track a little more, like Moses Mendelssohn in the 18th century. He thought that there were too many ideas or thoughts that were flowing at once, and that it was blocking speech. There's too much trying to get out. Basically like the Three Stooges model of stuttering. Remember they're all trying to go through the door?
Yeah. So you've got too much to say and you want to just get it all out.
Right.
Interesting. That makes a little sense.
Erasmus Darwin, he said that it was bashfulness, emotions like bashfulness, that messed up the process of speaking, right?
Okay.
Definitely onto something there as well. And then a psychologist named Sandow said that it was brought on by either a dread of speaking or an over-eagerness to speak, kind of like what Moses Mendelssohn was saying in the latter example.
So it can be brought out by two completely opposite things?
Yeah. So a lot of this actually is kind of in step with our current thought about stuttering. And so either that means that these guys in the 18th century were prescient, or our understanding of stuttering is stuck in the 18th century.
Right.
I'm very curious to know which one it is.
Shall we take a break?
Yeah, let's.
All right. We're going to come back after this final break and talk about therapies that don't involve cutting your tongue apart.
Hey, everybody, fire up the grill and fire up the party. Get the Weber Sear Wood Pellet Grill. Smoke, roast, and sear on the same grill.
That's right. You can go from low and slow on smoke boost mode at 180 degrees all the way to high heat sear at 600 degrees. And it's got a full great sear zone so you can put more food on the flame.
That's right. Plus, you can utilize the smoke boost setting to intensify that smoky flavor. And direct flame cooking creates searing, crisping, and browning, so your food will look as good as it tastes.
That's right. The grill is hot in 15 minutes and cleanup is easy. You'll cook on two levels at the same time so you can make enough for everyone, then clean up quick with a pull and clean grease and ash management system at the front of the grill. Cook confidently with intuitive digital controls at the grill and enjoy the sleek, easy-to-use surface.
Plus, you can add a heavy-duty rotisserie or rust-resistant griddle insert to up your game. So get fired up for your new Weber Searwood Pellet Grill.
Hey everyone, Homes.com knows having the right agent can make or break your home search. That's why they provide home shoppers with an agent directory that gives you a detailed look at each agent's experience, like the number of closed sales in a specific neighborhood, average price range, and more. It lets you easily connect with all the agents in the area you're searching so you can find the right agent with the right experience and ultimately the right home for you. Homes.com, we've done your homework. All right, so now we're in the modern days, and we're not taking scalpels to the frenulum any longer because they've realized that it's not a physical affliction of the tongue. It's somewhere inside the brain, most likely.
Yes.
And they have a lot of recommendations for when a child starts to stutter and it sticks. And you found some other tips, too, which are great for parents. And kind of one of the main ones is give your kid plenty of room to talk, plenty of time to talk. Make sure they express themselves fully, because one of the side effects of having a stutter is your child may just end up retreating and being super quiet.
Yeah. I got from these tips for parents that there's kind of this maybe not fully spoken idea that you can actually cement your child's stutter if you handle it poorly when they start to develop it.
Uh-huh.
Like, which, knowing that, it just makes you even more tense about dealing with it correctly, I would guess, which could make the whole process even harder. But there are some pretty brainless things to do. This one almost killed me when I saw it, Chuck. The site, I think Kids Health is where I got this one, but it said maintain natural eye contact with your child. Try not to look away or show signs of being upset.
Yeah.
Get like, just break the arrow off in my heart.
Yeah, that's pretty sad.
Like, don't look away in disgust when your child is stuttering. monster. Go look in the mirror and take a bamboo shoot and put it underneath your fingernail and think about what you've done.
Another good one is, this feels like something that would be easy to do because it seems well-intentioned to say, like, you know, slow down, son. Take your time. Take a deep breath. Right. They say to not do that.
Yeah.
Because, you know, might make things worse.
Yeah, because what you're doing then is you're drawing attention to the idea that your child is not speaking correctly. And rather than just apparently letting them communicate at their own pace, right?
Yeah.
There's also seems to be a suggestion that the child has learned, your kid has learned to speak, to stutter because they're trying to get too much out at once.
Yeah.
And they may have picked that up from you. If you have like a rush pace in your household,
yeah,
one of the things that they suggest is to just kind of slow things down at home.
Mm-hmm.
And in addition to like schedule wise and like just taking time and just like letting everybody breathe maybe a little more than you guys are, also speaking more slowly, not just to your kid, but also to other people when your kid's around.
Yeah.
Speaking slowly, setting an example. It's called modeling your own speech so that your kid feels like they don't have to blurt everything out at once to get their point across. They're going to be heard no matter how long it takes. You're going to sit there and just listen to them speak.
Yeah. And like really listen. Another thing that seems like a no-brainer, but really just try and focus on what they're saying and not the fact that they're stuttering those words out. But, you know, when your kid tells you a story about something that happened at school,
right?
Don't concentrate or even bring attention to the fact that it's being said with a stutter.
Right.
But just take in their story. And if it takes a little while longer, then just respond accordingly.
Yeah. And in that same vein, like, don't tell your kid to stop and start over when they start stuttering.
Yeah.
Like they have to get the sentence just perfect or else you're not going to hear them out. And don't tell them to think before speaking. That's not helping anything at all.
Be honest.
Yeah.
Like, don't try and mask it and say that, oh, well, you don't have a stutter. Like, this is just, you know, you're just in a hurry or something. Like, they just say to be really honest and say, you know what, you have a stutter and it's a disfluence and it's nothing to worry about. And if you'd like, maybe we can talk to someone that can do some exercises with you. And, you know, just like all this sounds like no-brainer, not being a monster parent.
Yeah, but again, some of it does, like telling your kid, like, okay, slow down, take a breath. Now, what are you saying? Like, you think you're helping your kid, you're not.
Right.
So not all. Some of it is monstrosity. Others is just like this is what people would naturally do, but it seems intuitive. But you're wrong. Your intuition's dead wrong. Just let your kid talk and listen to what they're saying, not how they're saying it.
Right.
And apparently, this is good advice. Wow, that took me a second to get out. Thank you, though, Chuck, for patiently hearing it. Then.
Sure.
This is good advice to helping your kid just naturally shed the stutter,
right,
the developmental stutter, we should say. All of this we've been talking about is dealing with a developmental stutter, although a lot of it just applies to people with adult stutters out in the real world as well. Like,
sure,
you can take just about all of this and apply it to a business conversation if you have a coworker who has a stutter.
Yeah.
Like, don't look away in disgust. There's good advice right there all throughout your life when you're watching or listening to somebody with a stutter.
Yeah. I mean, maybe don't do that at all. And like,
right,
a real jerk.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Life advice.
But it's a good point is if you're sitting there and you don't look like you're hurrying somebody with a stutter along, you're just engage, you're into the conversation no matter how long it takes. I can't imagine how much that must help. And one thing that we didn't really, I think, point out that bears pointing out is that people who stutter do not necessarily stutter in the same frequency throughout like their day.
Right. Yeah.
There's definitely situations that are going to make the stutter way more pronounced. They're almost exclusively associated with higher anxiety situations.
Yeah.
I think the National Stuttering Association says that the number one situation where a stutter is going to be about as bad as it gets is during a job interview. And so employers, please don't think that this is how this person talks. This is probably as bad as their stutter gets, however yeah. they're stuttering in the job interview. So if they're, say, at home, and they're just talking to their wife or their kid or something, the stutter's probably going to be far less pronounced than it would be if they were having to give a speech at their friend's wedding, you know?
Yeah, and I found that with this person, Emily and I know that it's it can vary a lot within a conversation. It's a very severe stutter, and then they will say like a couple of sentences straight through with nothing. And then I think, oh, man. Like it catches me off guard because I'm so used to the stutter.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, well, you know, that's super interesting to me. You just like blurted out a couple of two or three long sentences with zero stutter or stammer. Well, it's right. the same thing.
I know, but they're fun to say together, aren't they?
They are. I don't know. I just find it really fascinating. You know, speech pathology can come a long way. I know that there are, it's funny. I looked online about curing stuttering, and of course there is no like patented cure, but Tony right. Robbins, after listening to recording our motivational speaker thing, I saw a video. I didn't even watch it.
Mm-hmm.
I just saw the title. It said, Tony Robbins cures a man of his stutter in 7 minutes.
Right.
So I was like, oh, come on.
Yeah. Yeah. I didn't see anything that said stuttering cures. There's basically none.
Yeah, I did not look into, I didn't have time to look into this new device, though. Did you?
Yeah, a little bit. It seems pretty untested as far as real-world application goes, but it makes sense intuitively, and apparently it does help in a clinical setting.
So basically it's like a hearing aid.
Right.
But it changes the person who's speaking's voice. And
A little bit.
Does it replay it?
Yeah.
Out loud for everybody?
No, just for the person in their ear, right?
Oh,
because
okay.
one of the ways that somebody who stutters will be able to talk perfectly well is speaking in unison or singing.
Oh, okay.
So like you can be sitting there talking to somebody just one-on-one and your stutter could be quite severe, but then if you and the person agree to sing together, you may not stutter at all the whole time you're singing. And I have no one has any idea why that's the case. They just know, and this device is based on that when we're talking in unison, or someone who has a stutter is talking in unison with somebody else, their stutter tends to go away. So what this does is it creates an echo. There's a bit of a lag with their own voice, so they feel like they're talking in unison with themselves.
Okay.
So it helps the stutter, again, at least in a clinical setting. I don't know if it would just be too distracting in a conversation or what, but I got the impression that they haven't tested it fully or proven it fully outside of the lab.
Well, the singing makes sense because remember Mel Tillis?
The name sounds familiar.
He was a country singer who had a really pronounced stutter kind of around like the 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Mm-hmm.
70s is when he was biggest, but... Yeah, but, you know, he was on, like, Hee Haw and stuff,
mm-hmm.
Grand Ole Opry, singing
oh,
like
gotcha.
A bird, and then had a tough stutter when he was talking to the audience, and that's what he was known for.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. It was like, you know, it was obviously what an act, but that was
it was his shtick.
Yeah.
Speaking of, so another famous stutterer, Chuck, are we there?
Oh, yeah.
Porky Pig.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was looking up Porky Pig, right? Because, you know, that's an unusual choice to have a cartoon character who stutters.
Uh-huh.
And it turns out that Porky Pig has a stutter because the guy who originally did Porky Pig, Joe Doherty,
mm-hmm.
had a stutter in real life.
Oh, really?
Yeah, pretty sweet, huh? Pretty heartwarming. Well, wait, there's more.
Yeah.
He did Porky Pig for the first 2 years, and then they fired him because he kept missing the cues because of his stutter, and they brought in a guy who didn't have a stutter to do Porky Pig from that point on.
But he did it with a stutter.
Yeah.
Because it was established.
Right.
Well, that's cruddy.
Isn't that sad?
That is sad.
Yeah.
Except Porky Pig's trick was to go to a different word.
Yeah, which is a fairly common technique, though.
Yeah, I imagine so.
Yeah.
Like if you get hung up on something, just say something else. that means the same thing.
Yeah, that's a good one. Or I think people will say, I can't remember. And just act like they can't remember the word when they know full well what word they're going for. They just can't say it. Right. So they just pretend like they couldn't or they forgot what they were talking about.
Should we name off some of these other famous stutterers? Because I think if you're an adult stutterer, you probably know these people.
Sure.
You may have looked it up to feel a kinship. But maybe if you're a little kid out there, it might make you feel better to know that Darth Vader himself, James Earl Jones, was a stutterer.
Yeah, big time.
Emily Blunt?
Yep.
She's terrific.
Mm-hmm.
Samuel Jackson?
Surprising right there.
Yeah, because the F-bombs flow from his mouth. Yeah. Like he was born with that talent.
Right.
Who else from Pulp Fiction? Harvey Keitel?
Yeah. I can't see Harvey Keitel stuttering.
No. And I guess all of these people just went through speech therapy, huh?
I would guess so, or else they all took mushrooms.
Because it doesn't say whether or not they were like stuttered as a child or when they overcame it.
Yeah.
But Nicole Kidman.
Albert Einstein.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Carly Simon.
And you said Winston Churchill earlier, too. He had a stutter as well.
Yeah. Bruce Willis.
Yeah, that's Shaquille? Surprising, too. Huh.
Shaq?
I could see. I think I've actually seen Shaq stutter before on TV.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
See, Bill Walton, Tiger Woods, Charles Darwin, Jane Seymour, Dr. Quinn herself.
Yeah.
Joe Biden, who will hopefully run for president.
Right.
He overcame his stutter.
Yeah. Well, all of them did, which is great. But at the same time, there are people out there who have accepted that they have a stutter. They probably spent a lot of time and money trying to get rid of it, and it hasn't gone anywhere. So they've kind of embraced it. So, I mean, if you've gotten rid of your stutter and you've overcome it, that's great. But if you've also embraced it, good for you as well.
Oh, boy, how about this one? You want to talk about overcoming a stutter?
Uh-huh.
Kendrick Lamar.
Oh, yeah, wow.
If you can overcome a stutter and then become Kendrick Lamar,
right,
then that should be a shining example, people, that you can do anything.
Yeah, or if you embrace your stutter, good for you as well.
Agreed, because you could be Mel Tillis, who is the Kendrick Lamar of country music.
Or Porky Pig.
The Kendrick Lamar of cartoon.
That's right. You got anything else about stuttering?
I got nothing else. We'd love to hear from people, though, huh?
Yeah, for sure. Get in touch with us. And in the meantime, you can find more stuff about stuttering, including a lot of support and resources for parents all over the web. And there's things like say.org and the National Stuttering Association and all sorts of great resources if you are looking for some information. And since I said, it's time for listener mail.
All right. I'll call this coming to see you in Chicago. But by this point, we'll be, I went to see you in Chicago.
Right. And was disappointed.
Hey, guys, want to write in and say, what a great show I just saw. No. Kidding. I want to write in and say thank you for putting together a really great podcast. Longtime listener and fan. And I even mentioned you in my work bio. And I checked it out, and she did.
That's awesome.
I really appreciate that Stuff You Should Know is informative, funny, and family-friendly all at the same time. This was especially valuable when my fiancé and I took his 10-year-old brother on a road trip from Chicago to Wisconsin Dells. In the car, we listened to a playlist of SYSK episodes that I put together to suit his 10-year-old taste. How spiders work, how ice cream works, and most importantly, because we were going to Wisconsin Dells, self-proclaimed water park capital of the world, how water slides work.
Nice.
Which oddly is one of our highest performing shows ever.
People love water slides, man. They love hearing about them. They love looking at pictures of them.
It got shared or something. It was so weird. I can't remember, but I went to look at our download numbers one time and I was like,
water slides is to the tops, huh?
What? I don't
higher know than marijuana?
Is. Well.
Higher than marijuana. Hilarious.
Those episodes really entertained him and introduced him to the concept of podcasts for the very first time. Thanks for everything you do. And she said they're going to see the fiance and Mara
mm-hmm.
are going to see the Chicago show. So I hope
nice.
You had a good time.
Yeah. And thank you very much for supporting us in our live shows. We appreciate that tremendously.
For sure.
If you want to get in touch with us like Mara did or Mara, we're going to go with Mara. You can tweet to us. I'm for real at Josh Clark and at SYSK Podcast. You can hang out with Chuck on Facebook.com/StuffYouShouldKnow or /Charles W. Chuck Bryant, appropriately enough. You can send us all an email, including Noel and including Jerry and Frank the Chair, to StuffPodcast@HowStuffWorks.com. And as always, join us at our home on the web, StuffYouShouldKnow.com.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
Ready, set, griddle this grilling season. Get the Weber Slate rust-resistant griddle with a carbon steel cooktop that's safe for metal tools. It's pre-seasoned and ready to cook on right out of the box. It's the griddle that stays ready, not rusty. This griddle heats evenly edge to edge. It reaches up to 500 degrees, and the Weber Works Prep Cook and Store system keeps cooking supplies handy. You can carry all the food, condiments, and utensils you need. So get fired up for your new Weber Slate rust-resistant griddle. Hey, if you haven't heard of Visible, well, now you have. They're the wireless carrier that's making wireless visible. It's in the name. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon as low as $25 a month, every month, taxes and fees included. Use promo code STUFF20 to receive $20 off your first month for listening to this podcast. Switch now at Visible.com. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com. The Visible monthly rate is $25 per month.